Hello and welcome to the WellFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, the brand new health, fitness and wellness podcast brought to you by WellFest together with presenting partner KBC. KBC are back as presenting partner for WellFest for 2020. Taking place on the 9th and 10th of May in the Royal Hospital Clonmaden, Dublin, WellFest will be offering an experience like no other with the biggest and best lineup yet. So make sure you go and get your tickets because KBC wants you feeling well good for WellFest 2020. Sign up to the KBC Well Good program at wellfest.ie, a completely free health and well-being plan featuring tips on healthy food, mindset, exercise, and more from leaders in health and fitness. Now, let's dive into this week's episode. Today we are joined by Brian Keane. Brian is a qualified personal trainer, a sports nutritionist, a strength and conditioning coach. He is the best-selling author of the book The Fitness Mindset and currently travels the world as a professional speaker. He also hosts his own podcast, The Brian Keane Podcast. Brian Keane, thank you so much for joining us here today.
The pleasure is all mine. Thanks so much for having me on.
Before we got started, we were chatting about how we've been trying to get me on your podcast and this is just how it's worked out. You're on ours.
We are 100%. As soon as this is done, we're organizing you on my podcast. That's a done deal.
It was the one of the names that jumped out when I was told the guests that we were going to have, because I was like, that's so funny. Because I remember when you'd messaged me about joining yours, I didn't see the message and it looked like I had. And I got back to you, I think, what was it like? Was it 3 weeks, a month later, going, oh my God, I'm just after seeing this now. And I'd say you were like, yeah, whatever. Like,
but that happens though. Like I know Marty, your schedule is nuts, like no more than my own and other people. So like whenever you get back, you get back. I'm like, yeah, it'll happen when it happens.
Right. For those of you who don't know who Brian Keane is, let's go right back to the beginning, Brian. How did you get started in health and fitness? And talk us through the journey up until now. One thing that stood out for me recently was a selfie you posted on your Instagram where you kind of touched into that. You were outside a gym that you used to work in. What was the name of the gym again? You were a personal trainer in?
In Fitness First in Shepherd's Bush in London.
That's the one, yes.
So I suppose a long story short, I grew up in the west of Ireland where I currently live now after having kind of traveled and lived in different places that I'll come back to, London in Shepherd's Bush being one of them. I grew up in a sports family, a GAA family, playing football since the age of 6. And that kind of was my introduction to the gym because I played until I turned into a teenager and I wanted to get physically stronger for football. Mm-hmm. I got a gym membership for my 16th birthday and started lifting weights, started to get really into that scene. And then over the space of, you know, the next 15, 16 years, I kept fitness as my hobby. And I have a background as a primary school teacher. That was what I call, quote unquote, my real job. I worked for 4 years as a teacher. And I would do fitness on the side. I would do the gym on the side. It was always something I loved and something I was passionate about. Mm-hmm. And in 2012, after I landed my first teaching job, it was the year before 2011, coming into 2012, I landed my first teaching job in that September, having done a undergraduate in business and then a postgraduate in primary school teaching, got my first job. And was like, yes, I'm like 5 years, all this hard work, all this time, energy, effort. I'm like, landed my first job. And I'm like, oh my God. This isn't what I want to do. I was like, I've spent all this time, energy and effort. And I had a conversation, I remember, with my mom that Christmas. I was 3 or 4 months into my first job, not enjoying it at all. And I remember my mom said something to me that I've never forgotten. I've used 100 times since on my podcast and platforms. And I remember she asked me the question when I was sitting at home going, look, I don't really enjoy teaching. She goes, what would you do for free? And I said, I would work in a gym. I was like, I would do something in the gym.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, why don't you go do that? Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I ever realized and made a thought on, yeah, actually, maybe this is what I should do. Like, and I, long story short, went and became a gym instructor, did my level 2, loved that, went on to become a personal trainer, strength and conditioning coach, sports nutritionist, all alongside working full-time as a teacher. So I did all this part-time. Uh-huh. And then for 2 years in London, I did both. I worked as a primary school teacher during the day and I worked as a personal trainer at nighttime. And that post that you're talking about and referring to about the gym in Shepherd's Bush, that was kind of one of my lowest points. That was in 2012, kind of that later in 2012, 2013, where I had got all my qualifications. I built up my fitness business, or I built up my fitness credentials, and I started renting a gym in Shepherd's Bush, the Fitness First in Shepherd's Bush in London, which is just in West London. And after 2 or 3 months, I'd blown through all my savings. I had spent everything on gym rent, on my rent in London, on buying gym equipment before I had any clients. And I remember it was that moment where I'm like, oh my God, why did I bother with this? I'm like, I'm not meant to be a fitness person. I'm not meant to be a personal trainer. I'm like, what were you even thinking? I'm like, you're a teacher, go back teaching. And it took me a while to get a little bit of confidence on the back of that, because I had to go through the back of my couch to get money for the bus. Mm-hmm. And I needed money for the bus to go to my bank so that I could take out a loan to pay my rent that month. And it was a very low point because I was, you know, 24. I didn't want to tell any of my friends. I was super embarrassed.
Of course,
I was like,
oh my God.
It was just one of those moments. And I got very lucky, to be honest. I went back working in a school to try and pay my bills. And one of the teachers in the school at the time was getting ready for a wedding. And she's like, look, you're a personal trainer. Will you train me? I'm like, no, I'm terrible at personal training. I'm like, I'm no good. And she was like, look, I'll give you money. I'll pay you cash in hand.
You were like, oh, I'm actually really good now. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'm amazing. I'm like, I'm the best trainer ever. And so I started training her in a park. And she got amazing results. And
that made
me realize that it wasn't that the fitness was my issue. I just wasn't very good at business and didn't understand how to run my business.
Okay.
So I started building up a portfolio of clients. Eventually made the jump in 2014, left London, left my teaching job full time and moved back to Galway, moved back in at my mom and dad, mm-hmm. was driving my sister's little Toyota Yaris, one of those like car that was as old as me, that you're like turning the ignition every morning. You're like, please start.
That, like not even a 1 liter. It's like an 800cc. And you're,
That was it. I'm like
one big Brian Keane coming home from London, driving around an 800cc Yaris there. Yeah, he did really well, didn't he?
Rocking in style. Listen, it's like, yeah, this guy's doing great. I'm like, oh my God. But it was a case, Marty. I was very lucky in that sense because I had been working for 2 years as a personal trainer in the evenings, mm-hmm. and I had built up confidence in my ability to work in fitness. So I understood nutrition. I understood fitness. I understood how to get people results. I just didn't have any clients and nobody knew who I was.
Yeah.
I didn't have any social media. I didn't have any podcasts. There was no books. There was nothing like that. But because I was good at my craft, I built up a client list very quickly when I moved back to Galway. And over the space of the last few years, you know, I wrote my first book, The Fitness Mindset, which did amazing, like way better than I ever expected. You know, it was 16 weeks on the bestseller list on Amazon.
Amazing.
You know, just did amazing things. Like I was just so grateful to anyone and everyone who shared, read, passed it on to their friends. Like it was one of those word of mouth successes that I'm mm-hmm. so grateful for. And then moved my business online completely. And now what I do today is basically I get to have chats with amazing people like you, Marty, like, you know, talking on a podcast, chilling out, like
traveling the world, doing mad races, being the ultimate charmer. Am I right?
Yeah, but that's, yeah, well, that too.
It's some story because when you're in a field, you know, that people want to be in, they look at it from the outside, especially when it comes to online, and they kind of go, oh, Brian Keane, that's the job I want to do. Look at him. He's having a great time. He's doing all this and that. That's what I want to do. And then it's nice for you to be so real and go, well, there was this one point where I was scraping 50p from the back of my couch and I just had to keep on going. So it's nice because a lot of people take that hit and they don't realize that that's actually part of the process. You know, you do end up being at points in your career where you're like, no, can't do this. And it's great to have people like you telling people just keep going, like, because look where you are now.
But that's the secret. Like the every setback and every failure is an obstacle. They're all stepping stones. Like they're literally the things that make you do better. They give you feedback on what not to do going forward. Mm-hmm. Like, and fortunately I haven't gone broke since. Yeah. Like, because I'm like, let's not do that again. I'm like, yeah. I made some silly decisions. Like, let's not do that again.
Right. From the backstory to nowadays and what you're doing, and let's talk about you competing in these mad endurance events. Brian, I think you're absolutely crazy. I'm definitely not the only person who's told you this. From the ultra marathons in the desert to the Arctic, as well as your Ironmans. Like, what sparked your interest in these sort of events? Because, like, I've been lucky enough to speak to some really cool people on this podcast, you know, and from marathon runners, I'm just looking at them and kind of going, wow, you must have not only like a physically strong body, but you must be mentally strong as well. You know, where does the interest to even start training for one of these come from?
So it's a little bit different based on the different events, because I'm very vocal on my podcast as someone that runs ultramarathons, how much I hate running.
Yeah, I know. And I've heard you on your podcast before. Yeah. And I think, now correct me if I'm wrong, one of the things you said on your podcast, you spoke about how you love running on a treadmill.
I love...
Did you say that?
I did, but I'm going to give context. Okay. The reason I love running on a treadmill is because I find running, I don't like running full stop, and running on a treadmill is insanely boring.
This is coming from the guy who's going to do.
There's method to this madness. Like, it's one of those that, by definition, and I spoke about this in books, particularly Rewire Your Mindset, my newer book, that I, by default, am very mentally strong.
Okay.
Like, the example I always use is, one of the reasons I could always connect with my massively overweight clients or my obese clients was, even though I never struggled with being overweight or obese, I was fortunate in that respect, but I did understand when having a very weak mindset. And when the example I always tell people is, Marty, have you ever met that person? We're both friends of Trish. Trish is a great example.
Yes.
Trisha Lewis. Like, you know, somebody that was very overweight or obese to start with, and then went on this journey to become a better version of themselves, and is now significantly slimmer. And, like, fast forward 12, 18 months, like, look at Trish, where she is now. And fast forward that, it's going to be even more incredible in 12 months' time. And that's how I feel about mindset. I'm like, I would default to very mentally weak. So setting challenges and doing these sorts of challenges and running, even though I don't like to run, helps me build that little bit of mental strength and mental toughness, because it's not something that I have naturally. Like, I'm naturally lucky in the sense that I'm relatively fit. You know, I grew up playing sport. Mm-hmm. Like, there's certain things that I find easier than others, but challenging myself to be mentally stronger and more disciplined isn't one of them. It's something that I have to very consciously do every day. So the reason that I anchor my day in two different things that I do every day, because I don't like doing either. Like, I get up at 5 a.m. every morning because I hate mornings. Like, I'm a night owl by nature.
Yeah.
But I get up at 5 a.m. because it forces me to get out of bed and do something I don't want to do, mm-hmm. even though I know my life will be better for doing it. And running is the same. Mm-hmm. You know, I run on a treadmill because I don't like to run. You know, I love working out. Like, don't get me wrong with fitness. I love weight training. I love CrossFit.
Yeah.
I love strength and conditioning. I absolutely love that. And I'll do that till the day I die. But running, I don't enjoy. But it does make me mentally tougher because it conditions me to do something that I know I need to do, even though I don't feel like doing it ever. And the reason that I sign up to these ultra endurance events is because, Marty, between you and me, I won't run otherwise. Like, if I don't set a goal, and it has to be something that scares me, like the marathon to Saab, the six back-to-back marathons in the Sahara that you mentioned earlier, like, that forced me to train. I'm like, there's a real downside that something bad could happen here. It's like, you need to train. You need to run. Like, and the Arctic was the same. When I ran through the Arctic last year, you know, that was 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle line. And it was the same. I was like, there was enough fear there that I'm like, I need to run. I need to train. Because otherwise I won't.
Yeah.
Like, I won't. I'll just go in and I'll do some dumbbell curls and I'll do some presses. And I'll be like, all right, cool. Muscle pump. And I'll leave.
Yeah, like, I get you. Yeah. At least you look good in the pictures.
But it forces you. Yeah. So that's long and the short of it. That's why I do it.
It's mad, because to go from competitive sport, I think, into these sort of events, like, it does take a serious, like, you know, transitioning with your mindset. It really, really does. Because I come from a competitive sport background where I played basketball. And then I went down the whole weightlifting route like yourself. And like you said, you know, weightlifting to me, it's just, I enjoy it so much. I'll do it till the day I die. But the thing is that I wasn't doing what you're doing, where you're getting up at 5 a.m. and going for your runs. And I've decided now I have to go back to competitive sport, because without a purpose, I won't run. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, which is pretty much what you're saying. You know, you get up at 5 a.m. to do it, whereas I'm going to go back to playing basketball, because to me, what you're doing, it's a lot harder. It takes a lot more of a mental effort, because you're going out by yourself and you're peeling yourself out of the bed at 5 a.m. And I'm sure there's days you just don't want to do it. Like, I'm sure you've many of those days. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, just to kind of piggyback on what you said, Marty, it's completely relative. Like, you know, going back to play competitive sport, or me getting up at 5 a.m. to do a run, is the same as somebody else going for, you know, a 3 kilometer walk after work when they know they're going to be tired.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Prepping meals so that they can make better food choices the next day at lunch, because, you know, that there's going to be a box of Quality Street there. But if you have your meals prepared or your lunch prepared, you're less likely to eat that chocolate because you're trying to lose weight. It's 100% relative. Like, my 5 a.m. and running is my version of what I need to do to make my life better and build my discipline and build my mental toughness. For somebody else, that's completely different. You know, it's not about going back to play competitive sport or getting up at 5 a.m. or running crazy challenges. Like, somebody else's version of that is relative. So it's always worth bringing it back to, like just asking yourself the question, like what's my end goal? What do I want to do? Mm-hmm. And what do I need to do? And what would make my life better if I just did it? You know, one of my mentors used to tell me that successful people do what they have to do, whether they feel like it or not. And everyone has a version of that. I think once you get clear that there's a target self, there's a part of me or something I want to do, what do I need to do every day that's going to help me hit that end goal, lose weight, run that 5K, run that 10K, go back playing sports, run a marathon, whatever it is, it's completely relative. And then it's just bringing it back to you and then asking. Because, you know, Marty, for someone that lives your lifestyle, particularly because you're between work and training and everything, like I follow your Instagram stories, I'm like, man, he's on the go all the time. Like, and there's things you do that you don't want to do, but yeah, you do it anyways. And you're drawing from parts of your life, like training when you go to the gym, when you don't really want to do it, it makes it easier to do that work task that you don't really want to do because you have some contrast point that you're able to draw from. And I think it's very important for everyone to realize that they have a version of that. And it's like, just set the target, set the goal, and then just start mapping actions to that ambition, whatever that is. It's completely relative. And it's not about how you feel on the day. It's about just what you do consistently every day. Tell me what you do every day. I'll tell you where you'll be in the year. It's about what you do consistently, not necessarily what you do on the days you feel like doing it. You know, that's coming back to the motivation. I'll do it when I'm motivated. It's like motivation doesn't determine results. What you do every day and what you do consistently determines results. Motivation is just a feeling that waves kind of up and down day to day.
I love that. And this is why I love listening to your podcast, Brian, because you do make me think about things in a completely different way. And along with your podcast are some of your posts on Instagram. Some of them, they make me laugh. They really, really do, because you're just so blunt. You just do not care who you offend when you put out some of these things. And the reason why I love some of your Instagram posts so much is that I love being fed. And Brian, you feed me. You feed me. You feed me important information. Information that is real. It's researched and it just debunks so many myths. Like what got you into start posting these videos? Was it just you seeing these myths and these fad diets and just getting fed up with seeing them? You were like, you know what? I need to just clear this all up. Because I'm sure some of the videos you post, you get some people commenting, I'm going, you've no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, and that's the nature of putting things out there. Like, all I can really do is put out stuff that's kind of well-researched and have a good, like, my general thought process on anything I post, Marty, is I don't generally believe I deserve to have an opinion on anything unless I can argue the people who hold the opposite side of that opinion and I could argue better than they can.
Gotcha, okay.
So that normally helps me. So if I put up a video about, you know, a company or a diet or this, that, or the other, I'm normally giving my viewpoint and opinion. But if you asked me, can you argue the complete opposite to what you're saying right now? I generally can. And that just allows me to kind of shore up my defense on when I'm trying to back up a point I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
So when it comes to Instagram, it was feedback. Like I do on my Instagram stories, Monday to Friday, 10-question Q&A, where it's basically just trying to serve my audience. I'm like, the people following me, like I never wanted to be one of those people on Instagram that people are like, oh, why do you follow Brian Keane Fitness? And it's like, I don't know. Like, you know, he's pretty or he's big or he's whatever. Like, you know, I never wanted to be one of those people.
I get you. Yeah.
Like, I'm sure people don't say that anyway. They're like, this guy, what's he on about? But I wanted to try and provide value to the people following me. So I started doing the 10-question Q&As. It's just like anything I can help with, you know, pop me a question and I'll answer it. And what was happening was I was getting the same questions over and over and over again. So I started to create longer form videos that I could send people to. And that's where a lot of it came back. Mm-hmm. And then I just try and do it in kind of a semi-entertaining way if I can.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's
I use some analogies that I probably shouldn't. But
the analogies are brilliant. They are so, so good. So that's what hooks me into the video in the first place. But I do love them. So please don't stop them, because 9 out of 10 times I watch them, I've had somebody ask me the same question, and it's just great to see somebody actually put it together and stick it out there, because then I can refer the people who asked me to your videos. So keep it up, please.
Amazing. Thanks so much. I will.
So, Brian, you spoke about the Sahara and the Arctic, and you were very humble about it there, because you kind of just mentioned them and kind of just moved on really quickly. And we can't just let you brush over them that quickly, because they're extreme. And I'm sure you're aware of this. So tell us a bit about both of them. Okay, you mentioned, was it 250 kilometers in Sahara and 230 in the Arctic that you ran?
So the Sahara was 6 back-to-back marathons. So that's how it lays out over the 6 days. And then the Arctic was 230 kilometers over 5 days. They're both pretty extreme for very different reasons. Marathon de Saab, which I mentioned is the 6 back-to-back marathons, was a real eye-opener for me because I had never ran a marathon when I signed up for it. And that was, I heard about it. I went to an event. I was at an event in Amsterdam and I met a guy who since became a close friend, Tom Otten. He's been on the podcast twice. And he was telling me about this race through the Sahara. It's called Marathon de Saab. He goes, you have to be, it's self-sufficient. So you have to carry all your food on your back. You have to carry everything you need on your back. And you're sleeping outside and you're running 6 back-to-back marathons. And I remember asking him questions. And I'm like, that sounds mental. He goes, yeah, you need to have a venom pump within arm's reach at all times in case you get bitten by a snake. And it just kept going on and on with this. And I missed the whole next part of the conference because I was there tapping away on Google going, oh my God, this thing sounds amazing.
Sounds amazing.
it's kind of where my brain went. But a weird thing happened then, Marty. As much as I'd love to be like, I signed up for it and I conquered the Sahara. That's not what happened. I thought about it and then I got that thought that most people get that I'm like, I don't think I could do that. Uh-huh. And that's what sat with me then for the next couple of months. And then I started putting out content on, it was Snapchat at the time, back mm-hmm. when Snapchat was kind of exploding in Ireland. And I remember putting out content and people were asking me, they're like, oh, I'm really afraid to do this, that, or the other. I'm like, just go and do it. I'm like, attack it. And then I remember sitting going, oh, you're such a hypocrite. Yeah. I'm like, you literally have this race you heard about and you don't think you can do it because you're afraid of doing it. And I was like, okay, I got to put my money where my mouth is. And I signed up for it in that August. So that was August 2017. And I remember thinking, I've never ran a marathon. I was like, how am I going to run 6 back to back? How am I going to do them in the Sahara? So I was like, pyramid of prioritization. I'm like, well, there's no point worrying about running 6 back to back marathons if I can't even run one. So I started training for one. I was like, I started my first run. I'll never forget this till the day I die. I'll never forget this. I did my first run at the end of my workout. It was 2 kilometers. 2 kilometers, Marty.
Yeah.
And I nearly got sick. And I hadn't ran. I was bodybuilding. Like I was competing as a fitness model for years.
Yeah.
Like, so all my training was like weight training, low intensity cardio.
Yeah.
And then I did this 2 kilometers and I nearly got sick. And I remember thinking, oh my God, what have you signed up for? But again, like everything, you know, it got easier. I'm like, right, I went from 2 kilometers at the end of my workouts to 3. And then I went from 3 to 4 and 4 to 5 and 5 to 10 and 10 to 20. And then I ran my first ever marathon in January of 2018 in Dubai. So I ran that with a backpack and a hoodie to prepare for the Marathon de Saab.
Yeah.
And then 4 months later, that April, I went through the Sahara, did the 6 back-to-back marathons. At the time, it was the hardest thing I'd ever done, like just because of the heat, the fear of the unknown, all the stuff that comes with it. Mm-hmm. But I got a lot from that because I finished that. And the difference between the Sahara and the Arctic was when I did the Sahara, I didn't truly believe I was going to be able to do it until I crossed the finish line, until it was over at the very end. I just wasn't sure. I'm like, I'd never done anything like that before. But because that was my feeling all the way through and all the way in the lead up to it, it made me come back. And then I started questioning. I'm like, okay, where else am I holding all these limitations? I'm like, you went through this, you were afraid of this and you did it. I'm like, you're limiting yourself on all your other beliefs, all your other thinking. Mm-hmm. So I started talking about that more on my channels and people connect with it to some degree. And then the Arctic was the next kind of logical step. Logical. My thought process being that
I'm listening to this right now, it's not logical at all. Like,
yeah. Okay. So my relative next logical step was I was like, I've done the heat and I was like, well, the Arctic is cold. I was like, I'll do the Arctic. I'm like, that sounds like it's going to be hard. Now,
does it, yeah.
To be honest, yeah, like to be honest, the Arctic was 10 times harder than the Sahara.
That was what I wanted to ask you. Like, when it comes to heat and cold, I could never, I don't know. I honestly couldn't pick between the two. Well, I'm never going to probably run a marathon in either, let alone 6. So I don't know.
You say that
from
now.
From the surface, I would have probably picked cold, I think. But now I'm listening to someone who's done it before saying that you found that harder than the Sahara.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing is with the Sahara, like, it's difficult. Like, 6 back-to-back marathons for anybody is difficult. Like, you know, I know it's relative, but in relative terms, it's difficult. But you can take breaks in the Sahara. Like, if you're running and you're like, oh my God, I just need a break. Like, you can stop. Well, you can't do that in the Arctic. It's too cold.
Oh, okay.
So you have to move for that entire 230 kilometers. Like the main, like I remember before I went out to the Arctic, like I always do, you know, a cost benefit analysis. I'm like, well, what are the things that could potentially kill me? You know, that's, you have to do that assessment before you go. And I'm like, well, hypothermia is a real risk. I'm like, I need to guard against hypothermia. I was like, frostbite. I'm like, that's a legit risk. I need to guard against frostbite. And then what I didn't realize before I got out there was, they're called snow holes. So physical injury. I'm like, you can be running through the Arctic and you can just fall down a snow hole. And I like, yeah, it's mental. It happened. Thankfully, it happened about 10 kilometers into the first day. And I was running with the guy who ran with me. He ran me the marathon to Saab, and he ran through the Arctic with me. Simon Halpin's his name. And he was running beside me. And I fell through one, and then he fell through one about 5 kilometers from one another. And neither of us could get out of the hole without the other.
No
I remember
way.
Thinking, I was like, if he's not here, I can't get out of this hole. Because what happens with a snow hole, as you try and climb out, the snow comes in on top of you.
It's bigger.
So you need someone to be standing outside, braced and holding on to something to pull you out. So we made that like at the 15 kilometers into the first day. We're like, right, let's stay side by side for this whole thing. I'm like, it's too dangerous to go this alone at any stage. So when I got to the Arctic, I was guarding against that, guarding against hypothermia, guarding against frostbite. Like, because the coldest it got in the Arctic was minus 38 degrees. And that was fine when you're moving. Like, as you're moving forward, you don't really feel the cold that much because you're obviously, you're sweating a little bit and you're moving and you've got good kit. But as soon as you stop, you start to shiver. Like, I remember there was one point, because it gets dark very early in the Arctic, like at 4 p.m., it's like pitch black at 4 p.m. in the Arctic. And I remember at one stage, like I was dying to go to the bathroom and it was minus 38 degrees. And I'm like, no, I was like, I'm going to hold it. I'm like, there's certain body parts that are more important to me than others. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm just going to hold it. Like, and I'd never experienced that before where you're just like, you can't stop. You have to just keep moving. And then like another thing that happened for anyone that's listened to that podcast, I tore my Achilles in the Arctic. So 86 kilometers from the end, my Achilles tore. So I ran the last 86 kilometer on a torn Achilles. Ugh. Like it put me out for 3 months. I couldn't walk for 3 months when I got home. But I got through it. I finished it. I crossed the Arctic Circle line. That pain, like, is like nothing I've ever experienced. Like, my relationship with pain is completely different since I got back from the Arctic. Like, I honestly don't think there's any physical pain I couldn't withstand after that, because it was just like, it was searing through my body. I felt like someone had an electric cord through my spine, like every time I stepped. But again, it's like everything, it's relative. Like, you just put one foot in front of the other and you keep moving. See, you know,
I know, like, I'm laughing during you telling me some of these stories, and I probably shouldn't be laughing really, because like, I'm laughing at what's technically your misfortunes in this race. But
oh, it's totally ridiculous.
It's so, that's my point. Like, it's like, I'm like you decided to do this. Like, and I'm obviously, it's amazing that you did. I think my humor just takes me to like the certain spots where, like, I think of you trying to climb out of a hole, like in the middle of the Arctic, trying to run 230 kilometers. Like, I just can't help but laugh, because your average person wouldn't put themselves in that position in the first place. So I didn't know about the injury now for the last 80 kilometers. That's insane.
Yeah, that was that I think that's why I got so much from the Arctic, because it, but that's what made it so hard. Because I remember I was talking to, because like, the Arctic is such a cool setup. Like, you have like the local indigenous tribes, they're called like the local Sami tribe, they're a local reindeer tribe, and they help set up the course that you're like not getting lost. So they set up these little teepees, like, and they'll be like putting holes in the ice, and they'll be cooking reindeer stew, and like, it's just such a cool experience. But I was chatting to one of the doctors that was in the little teepee. And she was like, yeah, your Achilles is gone. She was like, if you keep running, she was like, it could rupture. She's like, if it ruptures, you're going to have to be helicoptered out of here. And it sounds ludicrous now. And even when I hear it back, when I listen back to podcasts or interviews, I'm like, yeah, that sounds mental. But that, you're not in that zone. You're not in that I'm quitting zone. You're in that, cool, if it goes, it goes. If it ruptures, it ruptures.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the mindset you're in. Like, that's a developed thing. Like, that's not my default by any stretch. You know, ironically, the reason that's my go-to when I'm doing races is because my default is to go to plan B and to quit. And one of my ways to guard against me quitting anything I do, because I would have a proclivity to quit things, would be to not give myself a plan B. Like, I'm like, there is no plan B. I'm like, I'll even a helicopter or I finish the race. I'm like, that's it. Like there's no in between. But that's not out of a sadistic or psychotic thought process, even though it might sound like that. That's just me trying to guard against that systems over willpower. Like that's me trying to guard against my own mental weakness. Because if I give myself an out, I'll take it. Because I've done it for most of my life, man, up until the age of 23, 24, I quit nearly everything I ever started.
Yeah, okay.
Like, and that's my way against it, because if I give myself a plan B, I tend to take plan B. Mm-hmm. So I just don't when I do a race. You know, the upcoming one in Nevada, it's the same. There is no plan B. It's like you finish or you leave in an ambulance. Like there's no way around that. And it sounds ludicrous, and I know, because like it is to a degree.
It actually doesn't. It's really refreshing in a way, to be honest. And I'm glad that you've now touched Nevada, because you could be listening to this going, okay, he's done the Arctic, he's done the Sahara. Like, I mean, he's obviously going to stop for a while and maybe do it. No. He's doing 100 miles in Nevada in 2 days, 3 days.
Saturday.
Yeah. So come here. You're talking to us about how you had to identify what could go wrong. What can go wrong in Nevada, Brian?
Nevada's not as complicated as the Arctic or the Sahara. Just because it's the distance that's so difficult. Like it's because you're trying to cover, like my goal, I have 31 hours to cover 100 miles. And I want to do it in 24. So I'm kind of hoping that everything goes okay. But it's because of the distance. Like, I just don't know what's going to happen to my body in that amount of distance at that speed. So again, you're guarding against the downside, like the major downsides are, you know, the heat, the electrolyte imbalance, you know, potentially passing out on the run if you're not hydrated properly. Like, but they're not as, none of my downsides on the 100 miler are setting me up for potential death, which could happen in the Sahara and the Arctic. If you're playing out like the worst case scenario, like, you know, I get, like worst case scenario, I could walk outside my front door and get hit by a bus. Like, you know, but in the 100 miler, it's not going to be as bad. So I'm kind of hoping that we'll see how it all goes. But I'm kind of hoping that the distance is going to be the biggest struggle. And again, I'm looking forward to it. Like, I'm very fortunate with the life I live, that I have a very comfortable living. You know, I do really well. I get paid to do things I love. I have an amazing family and friends and inner circle. Like, I don't really have major discomforts in my life. I've cut out a lot of those things. So these are like challenges that force me into discomfort. And I kind of look forward to seeing what happens when I get to breaking point. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, what happens when push comes to shove? I'm like, what happens when you're at mile 58 or mile 59 and your body is just broken? Like, what happens when you want to quit and you're mentally just drained? I'm like, all right, cool. Let's see what happens then. So a part of me kind of looks forward to that, because it just, it makes me like, I've spoken books and podcasts, like I've had dealt with so much with kind of mental health side of things, you know, self-imposed anxiety, environmental depression from making bad decisions and being around bad people. And when I do these challenges that are like voluntary challenges, they make me so grateful for all the simple things I have. Like, you know, you come back from the Arctic or you come back from the Sahara, which is, sounds extreme. Not everyone will do that. Like, but a marathon is something similar. Like, there's nothing better than that first meal or that first, like, you know, my daughter, I met her at the airport when I came back from the Arctic. Like, you know, there's nothing better than that hug. Like, and it just, they're things that I sadly would say that I might have taken for granted at other times in my life, whereas now I don't. And it normally comes from that voluntary suffering. And like, you don't have to run through the Arctic of the Sahara to get that. Some people get that from running a 10K, you know. It's literally so relative, you know. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens at the 100 miles, to see when my body, brain, mental, everything wants to go and stop. I'm like, all right, cool. Because it'll make a good podcast, if nothing else. Like,
absolutely. It'll be entertaining for the rest of us, for sure. For someone who does running from a recreational point, like, you know, point of view, they don't do these mad races and stuff. You're telling me now, I presume 31 hours is the cutoff point that you don't get recognized. Okay, unless you finish within 31, you're telling us you want to do it in 24. So what kind of pace are we looking at per mile, with breaks included and stuff? Are there breaks? You know, I mean, I know you're not going to know really until you're running when you can take a break or not. You might not want to, like you said, in the Arctic, you refuse to go to the bathroom at one stage. Like, so for someone who, like I said, just runs for leisure, you know, what kind of pace are you looking at for at yourself for this Nevada?
I'm actually not doing it off of pace tracking, just because it's not, I actually don't like getting into the weeds of my pacing. And I was the same when I used to compete in bodybuilding. I never used to track my macros or calories or any of that. Like, I just don't do well with the number side of things. But the goal for the 100 miler is to run the first 50 and just make a good time at that first 50 and then see how my body's responding and just take it from there. Like, the thing is with ultra marathons, and the reason I gravitate towards them, even though I hate running, I love the philosophy they give, because you can't plan for an ultra marathon. I'm like, you can, you know, like, there's so many things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whereas a marathon, you can kind of plan for it. Like, the worst case scenario, it's done after 26 miles or so. Like, you know, you can kind of plan for that time. But an ultra marathon, there's just an infinite amount of things that could go wrong, and you don't know how your body's going to respond, and you kind of just have to course correct. Like, one of the things ultramarathon has taught me, like, it's made me way better at business, because it makes you course correct. It makes you go, right, get to the start line in the best physical health you can be, and then as you're moving along, adjust accordingly. Do you need to go faster? Do you need to go slower? Do you need to take a break? Do you need to eat now? Do you need to do this, that, or the other? Like, you know, business is exactly the same, you know, fitness business, personal training business, you're like, right, cool, set your goal and then course correct as you go along. Like, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have a major plan for time or anything like that. It's just to basically try and get through the first 50 miles and then course correct as needed. Because I know I'll be fine for 50 miles. My body can do 50 miles.
Yeah.
But a lot of my ultra marathon friends are like, yeah, the next 50 miles is a different race. They're, you know, they're like, it's not like running 50 miles twice. They're like, it's like running it five more times, you know, because your body's just broken. So we'll see how it goes.
It's really interesting listening to the mindset of people who do this, because, like, to me, 50 miles, I'm laughing again. I just can't see myself ever doing 50 miles. And you're here telling me, oh, you'll do the first 50 and you'll see how you'll get on with the second. It's amazing. It really is. And to hear you so positive about it, it's fantastic. Like, it that energy, like, you know, can be taken by anybody and put into whatever they're doing with their life. You know what I mean? Really, really can. Like, I'm going back to competitive basketball this evening, and I'm already, I'm like, I'm going to run up and down. I don't care what my body tells me to do. Like,
yes.
If Brian can go do 100 miles in Nevada on Saturday, I can run up and down a basketball court for 40 minutes. earlier on, we touched on the fact that, you know, it's a well sought after job these days. It really, really is. You know, people really want to be a personal trainer. I think the job satisfaction, I can only imagine, is fantastic. You're getting to see people, you know, achieve their goals physically and mentally too. To anyone who's listening to us right now, you know, what's the best advice you can give to somebody, from someone who literally started from scratch, thought they'd failed, and now you are a successful personal trainer online. Your online business is booming, essentially. What can you tell that person, you know, to help them on their way?
Probably the best piece of advice I can give, and I always think when I'm offering advice like this, I'm like, what would I go back and tell myself of, you know, 8-9 years ago? So 8 years ago was when I kind of went broke in that Fitness First in Shepherd's Bush. And the analogy that I use on my podcast and in books, and I tell people regularly, is like what I call ladder up against the right wall. I'm like, if you're, when I think of ladder up against the right wall, when I was teaching, I was climbing that ladder and I was going further and climbing higher and higher, you know, because I was a male teacher and there's a shortage, I would have climbed faster than most because of just the nature of that occupation. But I remember thinking, when I was teaching, I was halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall. And when I went working as a personal trainer in fitness, I'm like, I'm at the bottom. When I moved back in with my mom and dad, driving my sister's Yaris, as I mentioned earlier, I'm like, I'm at the bottom of the ladder. I'm like, but this ladder is up against the right wall. And one of the things that I regularly tell people, I'm like, you're better to be at the bottom against the ladder against the right wall than halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall. And what I would generally advise people who are going into fitness or becoming personal trainers or anything along those lines, this goes for every job out there, is if you feel like you're at the bottom of the ladder against the right wall, keep going. I'm like, just keep climbing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, because at the end of the day, I remember I did a thought experiment, and that I never really thought about it until people started asking me this over recent years. And this was something I did back when I left teaching first, when I was trying to draw up that cost benefit analysis of leaving teaching versus going into fitness full time. And the reason it took me 2 years was, you know, fear disguises practicality. I'm like, oh, it's not practical to leave a well-paying job, you know, or a secure job, more so than a well-paid job.
Yeah, I get you.
And that was kind of the story that was wrapped around what I was doing, and it affected the decisions I made. But I remember doing a thought experiment where I'm like, would I rather get £100,000 a year as a teacher or £20,000 a year as a personal trainer? And I was like, I'd rather get £20,000 a year as a personal trainer. And that was the first time ever that I had separated happiness and the job and occupation I was doing from monetary success, because
gotcha,
I had them intertwined. They were mixed in with one another.
Yeah.
And when I drew it apart, I'm like, okay, it takes me very little to be happy. I'm like, I'm in a gym, I'm helping people get in shape. And when I was personal training, even though it's all online now, when I was doing that one-to-one, I'm like, I loved it. And it's one of those jobs for me, and it's similar to what I do now, where I do the podcast, I do my seminars, I do my programs. I'm like, when you have the feeling that you can't believe you get paid to do this, I'm like, you're on the right track. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those feedback mechanisms that I use. I'm like, every time I ask myself, right, is my ladder up against the right wall, what I'm doing? I'm like, when I get that feeling of, I can't believe I get paid for this. I can't believe I get paid to speak. I can't believe I get paid to work with people on programs. I can't believe I get paid to do this, that, or the other. I'm like, okay, ladder's up against the right wall. And for people that want to be trainers, personal trainers, or in the fitness industry or any job, I'm like, if that's your feeling, I'm like, just keep moving. I'm like, you'll get better. You know, don't make the mistakes I did. You know, like, I have a whole business podcast, which is like, you know, it's a separate podcast talking about all my mistakes and failures. And I'm like, don't do this. You know, like, but learn from other people, learn from people who have made the mistakes. Like, you have to learn from mistakes, but nobody said they had to be your mistakes. Like, yeah. Learn from the mistakes of other people. And doing that consistently over time, you'll keep moving up that ladder. Like, it's inevitable. If it's what you're meant to do and it's what you love doing and it's what you're passionate about and you're learning from other people and you're getting better at your craft, eventually, when enough time passes, you'll be quote unquote successful to the external world, but all the way along the ladder.
Brian, I have to say, the positive energy you exert is absolutely insane. Like,
That's coming both ways. There's just so much positivity here.
But like, when I'm chatting with somebody like you, you know, as an interviewer, it is my job to let you do the talking. There's just so many times that I just want to like have banter with you and, you know, hop in and be like, oh, this, that, and the other. Like, you literally have me with the biggest smile on my face here. I honestly can't wait to get into a gym. I can't wait to get back training. It's just the kind of energy you give off. So anyone who's listening to us right now, chat Brian King, you need to follow him absolutely everywhere. Before we get into where people can find you, and we'll ask you what your three main takeaways are for our listeners today, what's happening after Nevada? You know, I mean, then done the Arctic, the Sahara, you've done Nevada. What else has popped up in your Google searches that looks too crazy for a human to do that you might end up doing?
I'm running in the Himalayas in Nepal in November. So
as you do.
Yeah. So, and this is going to say, I actually didn't realize this till I said it to someone in the gym and they're like, that's not the next logical step, Brian. I was like, well, I've done the heat, I've done the cold. I'm like altitude mm-hmm. would be great. So I'm running in Nepal in the Himalayas in November. So it's, 6,000 meter elevation. So, just to give context, Everest is 8,000 meters.
Wow.
So it's just running at elevation. It's 170 kilometers running just directly up to Everest Base Camp. So as soon as this 100 miler is over, I'm going to start putting things into practice for training at altitude. I'll hopefully get into a couple of altitude chambers, play around my training in the gym, etc. And that'll be the next thing come November.
I don't envy you at all. Recently enough, my friend traveled around South America and I went to visit him for a couple of days in La Paz in Bolivia, which is statistically the highest city in the world. And I had this in my head before I even got off the plane, Brian. And I don't know whether it was placebo or not, but as soon as the door opened from the plane, I was like, I literally hadn't even taken a step yet. Met with him, I think it was like 6 or 7 in the morning, walking around the city. I was literally like, and I was only walking around. So I can't even imagine what it'd be like to have gone for a jog in La Paz that day. Actually, funny fact for you, you might find this interesting, anyone listening as well. La Paz, all right, they have a football club over there. Given the fact that you're going to be doing altitude training, and Bolivia used to play their home games there, whether it was World Cup games or regional matches, and every other country who had to go play there complained and put a formal complaint to FIFA because they thought it was unfair that they had to go train in what was the highest city in the world, and they all lost.
Yeah, I knew that. Like, I'm a football fan too. I knew that. I remember anytime I'd watch any of the like Copa America qualifiers,
exactly,
or
yeah,
any of those. Yeah, they're like, I'm like, how did Bolivia win that?
Yeah, they're literally going to La Paz. They're not obviously used to playing in altitude like that. And the players who wouldn't have been, I know Bolivia, you know yourself, they wouldn't exactly be the best footballers in the world. But it just goes to show what advantage it is. And like, I know it probably sounds like now that I'm going to be putting you off doing this race at altitude, I'm like, I couldn't even walk in it, Brian, let alone running it. And that's one journey I am so excited to follow. Brian Keane, you're absolutely mad. It's the best way to describe you. For anyone listening to us right now, what would your three main takeaways be for them? You know, it can be absolutely anything at all. We've touched on so many different things, from you being a teacher to being a personal trainer to endurance races to calorie deficits, anything at all. Three things that they can take away from this chat. What would they be?
I suppose the first things that kind of come to mind is everything we talked about in today's episode is relative. Like, and I never want people to listen to me or hear anything I speak about and think, right, he's nuts, he's insane, I can't do any of that. And I'm not saying, and it is nuts, like some of the things I do is crazy, but it's massively relative to the person. And I always want to bring that back, that even though I get up at 5 a.m. and I do runs and I run through the desert and I've ran through the Arctic and I plan to run through the Himalayas and all these things, I'm like, your version of that for people listening might be to get up 10 minutes earlier so that you're not running out the door first thing. Yeah. It might be to have that conversation that's uncomfortable because it's a conversation that you need to have to make some relationship in your life better. It's going to the gym when you know you're going to be tired. Mm-hmm. It's working with the coach and doing the due diligence on a coach you want to work with because it's important to you that you hit your fitness goal or whatever it is. It's like everything is relative. So never listen to me or anybody else. I'm fortunate on my podcast, and when you're on, Marty, it'll be cool. We'll be chatting. But when I'm on, I have people on my podcast that do crazy things sometimes. And I never want people to put me or anybody else on a pedestal and think that, well, they can do these things, because there's a version or something in that for you to take out of it and realize that, you know, whatever limitation you have on a 10K, a half marathon, a full marathon, I'm like, just set the goal. Mm-hmm. I'm like, just set the goal and then start working towards it. You'd be shocked to see what you can achieve when you actually set your goal. So I suppose that's the first thing. The second thing is process over outcome. Like, that's one of the things I come back to time and time again in everything I do. I'm like, just ask yourself, are you enjoying this process? Like, I do it all the time with people with their nutrition and their training. I'm like, if you're not enjoying your nutritional plan, if you're not enjoying your training, I'm like, in 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, you're not going to stick to that. I'm like, you can do anything for, you know, 3 weeks or 3 months or maybe even 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, but you're not going to be able to do it for the next 10 or 20 years. Mm-hmm. Like, so find something that you enjoy doing in your training, in your nutrition, just in your life in general. Always come back to the process and not focusing on the outcome. Like, the people that I've worked with that have had the best weight loss journeys or the best fitness journeys, I'm like, it's not that they're focusing on the, well, I need to lose five or drop five dress sizes. It's like they're focusing, all right, like, I need to lose the next pound. Mm-hmm. I need to lose the next 2 pounds. I need to drop my body fat that little bit more. I need to drop one dress size and then two, and focusing on the process. Keep the end goal in mind, but focus on that process. And then I suppose the last thing, tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. Like, that's the quote that I use most often on my podcast, and it comes down to just habits. It's about finding the things that you enjoy, the process that I talked about earlier, and realizing that motivation, you can listen to this podcast, you can listen to Marty, you can listen to other people and get super motivated. And that's great. Take that and go to the gym, or take that and go for a walk, or take that and go prep your meals. But realize that that ebbs and flows. It's about what you do consistently every day. Mm-hmm. Motivation is wavering. It's great that a song will get you up and going. It's great that a YouTube clip will make you feel energized, or a podcast will make you feel motivated. But it's not about that. When you're trying to get progress and you're trying to hit an end goal, it's focusing on what you do every day, because that adds up over time. It's not about the diet that you follow or the training program, this, that, or the other. It's about what you consistently do every day. Tell me how you eat every day, I'll tell you how you'll look in a year. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you train every day, I'll tell you how fit you'll be in a year. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. So I suppose that's my last take home from today's podcast. And Marty, this is awesome. Thank you so much for this.
No, thank you. We appreciate you for joining us, Brian Keane. It was absolutely fantastic. I laughed a lot. Like I said, I can't wait now to get out of the studio and go to the gym and go to training. That's the kind of positive energy you really do give off. Before I let you go, Brian, where can our listeners find you?
Probably Instagram of the podcast. So Brian_Keane_fitness on Instagram, and the Brian Keane podcast on everywhere that podcasts are available.
Brian Keane, it's been an absolute pleasure. You got to go do a race now.
Yeah, pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, Brian. Have a lovely day. You've been listening to the WellFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, brought to you by KBC. Remember to get your tickets for WellFest in association with KBC on the 9th and 10th of May in the Royal Hospital, Kilmainham, Dublin, if you haven't done so already. See you next time.